Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome everyone. Welcome back.
Welcome back. We have a super duper super special guest today. We have one of my favorite people in the world, Dr. Shashi Ranganath, here with us today. How are you?
Hi guys, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. Longtime listener, first time interviewee.
Excellent. We appreciate you making the time. So as you know, we have to ask, take us back to medical school. What was your toughest class or rotation in med school?
Okay, great. Okay, so I'm so excited because I've been listening to these. So toughest class in medical school, I would probably say histology for me. I don't know about you guys. Like, I found it kind of boring and mind numbing. I think it was just like about trying to memorize what everything was supposed to be. And then I found it so dry. I could never become a pathologist.
But yeah. No, it is. We talked about like the issues you have with microscopes. Were you good with the microscopes?
I am terrible with microscopes, actually. I'm terrible with anything besides glasses that has a lens. Like, microscopes, yeah. I could never, I was bad at magnifying and like binoculars. Oh, yeah. I cannot be a bird watcher either. Like, I can't focus them. So, okay, I'm a horrible photographer. Yeah, no.
Oh, that's so funny. Was your histology class, was it like part of like, so was it something like its own like entity, like when you were going through?
It was its own entity. Yeah, it was like lectures and then lab.
Wow, only histology. That's a little painful.
Yeah.
That's a little painful.
Wait, how were yours? Yours were combined with something else?
I remember
being just integrated with pathology. You know, I remember pathophysiology. I just remember histology being a portion of that, and we didn't spend that much time on it.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, no, we didn't either. It was kind of its own, like, it kind of like was just part of other classes. Like, when we did cardiology, right, they would do a little bit of histology. We did, you know, renal would be a little bit of histology. So, like, I guess we didn't get, like, too, I don't know, maybe it was by design because it is a little not exciting, I guess, so.
Yeah, that's probably the better way to do it because, they bolused us.
Yeah. Well, how'd you do it? Awesome. How'd you get through histology?
I just buckled down and did it. It was just one of those things I knew I had to get through. And so it was just like, you know, flashcards were basically a mainstay of all of medical school. So I think I just had a bunch of flashcards. Yeah.
Flashcards are so important.
Flashcards, and sometimes you just got to get through it. There's so many classes that are dry that you'll never be in. And at the end of the day, you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just trying to get through them. Exactly. So,
yeah.
Well, tell us, take us back. So, where are you from? Where is your family from? And where'd you grow up?
So, I am from Northern California. I'm from a rural area. I was born and raised in an area. So, it was called Lake Almanor, California. And then the area where I went to school, like elementary, combined middle and high school, was Chester, California, which is about 20 minutes away. So my dad is a general surgeon, and he sort of like he trained in India. Both my parents are Indian. He trained in India. He came over after doing medical school there, did like a bunch of his surgical training in the U.S. He was like at Baltimore for a while, and then Louisiana, and then Salt Lake City, and apparently, this is the story he's told me. He, you know, those throwaway like search journals, medical journals that used to be around all the time. Yeah. Not really any longer, but he found an ad for and they were advertising for a surgeon in this rural area in Northern California. So I guess he answered it, and he's like, "Let's check this out." And then he went there. But it's like when I say rural, I mean rural. So it was a town of 2,000 people. It was the main industry there is logging, and then it's a big lake. So then people from, we call them flatlanders. So people from Southern California would come up, and the Bay Area would come up during the summers, and they would vacation there, and then they would go back down after the summer was over.
It does sound like Oregon. It kind of sounds like
Yes.
Oregon.
Yeah. It's It was basically like Oregon. It's very similar, and it was actually not too far from Oregon. So that's that's where I grew up.
Was it growing up there? Yeah,
tell
us about the diversity. How was were there any other Indian families there, or tell us?
Yeah, no. So we were the only Indian family there.
Oh, really?
There was maybe one Hispanic family there, and then almost everybody else was Caucasian. And then we were, the way that, there are little towns in Northern California, they're pretty spread out. So my dad was a general surgeon for Chester, but also for two neighboring towns, Susanville, California, and then Greenville, California. And they're all about 30 miles away from each other. So he drove so much, he would just drive constantly to go to the various hospitals. And so there was another Indian family in Susanville, and I don't know that there was any other family besides them. And the husband and wife there were OBGYNs. So we were good friends of the family with them, but otherwise I grew up basically with no diversity, and we would go down to the Bay Area to visit family friends. And those were only the Indian connections I had. It's there was no temple. My parents are both Hindu. I grew up with almost no religion, or at least they tried, but I had really no exposure to it on a regular basis. So I am what I call myself, I'm not a good Indian. So then when I went to college and I was around all these Indian people and they were talking about this and this, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I didn't speak Hindi, I didn't speak the language. I was not a good Hindu. So that is where I grew up.
There are a lot of folks who have a similar experience where they're one of very few. Maybe they immerse, they're not in a culture that once you get to college, it's this is maybe what I've been missing out on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm sure you're right. Yeah. I just didn't, I felt it very keenly because, I think, there's such a sense of community in so many Indian cultures, and I just never felt a part of that. So it was just never something I think I felt so awkward that I never really sought it out later on in my life either.
Yeah, no, that can happen. Definitely. Yeah. When you feel you almost feel like an outsider, even though people look at you and feel like you should be an insider. So it's an odd.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have any siblings at all? Did you grow up with?
I do, yeah. So I have two sisters. I'm the middle one. My older sister, she's 5 years older, and my younger sister's a year and a half younger. So yeah, we all grew up in that town, and we all sort of have now made our way to the East Coast. Both my sisters live in Boston now. My older sister is a scientist. She did her PhD in immunology, so she's been working in sort of industry for years, and then my little sister is she went to medical school as well, and so she is a urogynecologist in Boston.
Wow. Very cool.
Your parents are very proud.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, that's nice. Did they kind of push you towards medicine growing up, or was it kind of something that you just kind of got interested in?
So yeah, no, my dad was definitely a huge go to medical school proponent. I mean, education with him was just first, second, and third. So he always wanted all of us to go to medical school. It was a bit of a scandal actually when my older sister decided not to go to medical school and decided to get an PhD. That was not a great decision in his eyes. But for me, I always actually wanted to be a doctor. Ever since I can remember when I was little, I always, when he would tell stories about his day in the operating room or whatever, I always found it fascinating. So from a young age, I always wanted to go into medicine. It was the only career I really ever considered.
Huh.
Yeah.
And did you want to be a surgeon at some point?
yes
however I did I knew I didn't want to be a surgeon
and I figured they were really busy.
Yeah, he was so busy. He was just he was just driving all the time or on call. He was basically on call 24/7. I think he when he would go on vacation, there was an OBGYN that OBGYN would help cover a call. But and when you see general surgeon, my dad actually, he did everything. He did, I think we talked about this, Travis, he did C-sections, he did thyroidectomies, he did parathyroidectomies. He did, you're a jack of all trades when you're in a rural area. So he was doing tons of stuff that wasn't just general surgery. He was doing breast surgeries, like abdomen, head and neck, you know, OBGYN. It was yeah, amazing.
Yeah, true general.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
A talented really man, cool. No doubt.
So when you, like, I guess we're in, like, high school, did you kind of, like, choose, like, a university based on, like, you wanting to be pre-med at that point, or were you just kind of choosing a place to just, you know, be somewhere different?
Yeah, I think my main thing was I think I wanted to be somewhere different. So the other thing about me, so my dad also thought getting through school faster was better. So and because I grew up in such a rural area, you could sort of like ask for things. And so I think he went to the elementary school. Is like, can she skip fourth grade? Like, can we move her along a little bit?
Oh, that's so, yes. This is the.
So I was. Yes, right.
It's just the question they ask that question at the beginning of every year. Can we skip this grade?
Yeah. And so they did.
I removed your gallbladder last month, so
yeah. You owe me. That's right.
Exactly.
So I skipped. I was already sort of young for my age, and then I skipped fourth grade. So by the time I graduated high school, and I was 16. I turned 17, wow. Like maybe like a week or two after I graduated from high school. And so when I was looking for colleges, I have a cousin who went to Yale undergrad, and we had sort of like, she'd visited me sort of recently when I was looking for colleges. And so mm-hmm. We got along very well, and we have like very similar personalities. And so I was like, oh, you like Yale, or you're going to Yale and you like Yale, and maybe I should go to Yale. So I applied to a bunch of different places for college, a few like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, a bunch in the UC system, since I was from California, like Berkeley and Davis, and then some schools in Southern California. But I knew I wanted to not really be in California, and I wanted to sort of branch out. So I don't remember where I got accepted to and not accepted to, but I ended up going to Yale undergrad, and I was just excited to kind of experience the East Coast.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So tell us about that. Was it kind of very different, I'm assuming, from Northern California?
It was very different. And it was culture shock for me. Mm-hmm. Because when I was in high school, I ended up doing well without really learning how to study. Like, I would study, but I would get good grades pretty easily because it wasn't very challenging. We didn't have AP classes. There were no honors classes. There was, you know, it was just rural school. And so I realized when I got to Yale that I did not know how to study. You know, I didn't know how to organize things. I found it extremely difficult. And I decided to also be a molecular biophysics and biochemistry major. That's what I decided to be.
Sounds complicated. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then I was like, wow. Well, okay, I don't know how to study. I'm pre-med and I'm this MBMB major, like, and then things, it was tough. And then just sort of like being out on my own being so young, and I don't think I was like very emotionally mature at that point.
But it's tough. There's something to be said. Yeah, something to be said about being young in college, because like there is like a certain amount of like, you know, most maturity that you do need to be able to succeed there. And it's tough. It's tough when you're younger and like you're finally out in a brand new place and there's like no rules.
Yep. So, I mean, you just turned 17 and you're 3,000 miles away. Like, did you have any family nearby? Was there a contingency plan if something went wrong?
So my cousin was at Yale. She was 2 years ahead of me. So we would have like lunch or dinner occasionally. So she was around if I needed her. And then her parents lived in Baltimore. So not too far, like much closer than my parents. So I didn't feel like I was like alone or anything. I think it was just, I felt very overwhelmed. I mean, New Haven was a big city, right? Even though it's like a small city and a campus. In a school.
It's all relative. It's a journey. It's definitely a journey. Wow. So tell us, so what certain classes, I guess, that were like typical for you when you got there?
So I think I've never been great at the humanities. Science was always more my thing. And so English classes, you know, lots of prereqs that were humanities classes. So lots of English classes were mandatory. And I remember just being like, oh, how long do I have to, like, how long does this paper have to be? How much can I double space it? And how far can I take in the margins, you know? And having discussions about books, I didn't really care. To me, that was than like physics or chemistry, even though but just trying to sort of get through those was difficult. But in terms of science classes, so I, you know, the normal science classes, and they were difficult, but my senior year, the class I've ever is
PChem. Yes. Yes.
I don't think I understood any of it, honestly.
That might have been the reason why I changed from chemical engineering, because I knew I had to take PChem and it was going to be like during the summer, it was going to be horrible.
Yeah. And we were at Ohio State, not Yale. So
I think it doesn't matter. PChem is PChem wherever.
It's Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you got through it though. Eventually you made it out. So tell us, what was your next step after that?
Like I said, I'd always wanted to go to medical school since I was like a little kid, couldn't remember anything else. So I was like, okay, I have this not great MCAT score. My GPA wasn't, like, I think that medical schools use formulas. Like it wasn't going to blow anyone's socks off. So, but I was like, but I still want to go to medical school. I'm going to apply. So I applied. I don't even know to how many medical schools I applied, like so many. And I did not get, I don't think I got any, I didn't get any interviews. So that was tough.
Right. That's really tough. And I mean, especially when you're like at it, like a, very prestigious school, and you see other people going to med school and they're getting like these interviews and they're like, bragging about what school they're going to go to. I mean, trying to, sit there and go through it must have been really tough. So what helps you like kind of get yourself together, I guess?
Well, I kind of had to come up with a plan B, right? So so what I decided to do was I had to take a year off. Well, I didn't have to take a year, but that's what I ended up doing. So I ended up deciding to volunteer in India for a year. Figure like, let me go visit some family. Cool. I hadn't been there since I was a little kid. I was like, I can sort of beef up my resume, your work, and just sort of have like a life experience. So I graduated in like May, and then in June I flew to Calcutta, which is not where my family's from. So my family's from South India, Bangalore. But I decided to go to Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity, which are like headquartered in Calcutta. So I went there and basically took like a duffel bag and showed up. I had like written a postcard to like the it's Shashi, I'm gonna be coming and volunteering with you guys. And people from all over the world decide they're mostly from Catholic countries. There are a lot of like Irish people and British, and there are actually a lot of Korean people there too. And so, I showed up and I basically moved into a hostel for several months, paying like $1 a day to live there. And then I would walk to the Missionaries of Charity, and they have various different places that you can volunteer. There's like an orphanage, there's like a long-term care shelter. There's just like several different, like a shelter for battered women. So I ended up working at one of them, and basically it's just manual labor. That's what they need. They need manual labor. Mm-hmm. So you would go there, you would sort of hang out with the volunteers and have a quick breakfast at the actual mission, like at the central headquarters, which is where the nuns lived. And then you would walk to whatever your assignment was for the day, and then you would just help out. So when I was there, I was doing a lot of cleaning. So lots of sweeping and mopping and helping to cook and things like that. Patients who couldn't like walk, you would help carry them sort of like to and from their bed and or to the, you know, to go to the bathroom and stuff like that. So that's what amazing. I did for like almost a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like it was an impactful experience. Like how do you feel that experience changed you? It would, have a big impact on you even now.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think it gives you perspective on like how people live and how like our life is just so blessed compared to, you know, so many people in the world. And, you know, just to be able to help people was fantastic. And like, I think that after that, I was like, why am I worried about not getting into med school? Like, there are people who are like dying. Right. There's so much perspective. Yeah. Like, there are people dying in front of me. So I was like, you know, I'm getting this experience. I was meeting really very like wonderful people from all over the world and making good friends and staying in touch with them and things like that. I was also taking the time to travel. So like my sister came, when my little sister came over and we traveled for a couple of weeks through Northern India. So it was honestly, it was the failing. So failing, talking about failing, like that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because then I had this amazing experience. And then I was like, okay, I gotta, and I wasn't like, it's not like I was applying to med school. So then I had to find something to do for another year, because my plan was still to go to med school. Like I wasn't giving up on that. So then I had to find something to do for the next year. And then I applied to med school then. So after that year, which was just amazing, I came back and I ended up getting a job through Yale. I like went to the Yale job board, or I think that's how I found it. And this was during the dot-com boom. So we're talking about 2000 now, year 2000.
Okay.
And I found a job in Washington, D.C. for an internet startup called mdlinks.com, which was, they had developed this like software that went out and like searched medical journals and then kind of collated high yield articles in different sites. So there'd be like a radiology links or immunology links or and so I was a medical editor there. So that's what I ended up doing for the next year after I came back from India.
While applying for school,
I didn't, yes. So I took my, so I sort of moved out there, I think in June or July, rented an apartment for like $250 a month with two other girls in Silver Spring, Maryland, because it was based in DC. So I moved out. So there's lots of, I was very nomadic at this point in my life. So I moved out to Silver Spring. And then got this job. Yeah, it was based in Northeast DC. And so started working for them. And I sort of like chilled out for a couple of months, and then I ended up applying. But at that point, I had actually had a family friend. I think it was like, I'm not going through the rejection again. I'm not going to apply to like a ton of different American med schools. I had a family friend who had gone to St. George's University, which is a medical school in the Caribbean. You know, there's a bunch of schools in the Caribbean.
Yes.
So I ended up applying to St. George's and a couple of other ones. And I got in there and I ended up going to St. George's University in Grenada, West Indies for med school.
Very, very cool. That's awesome. I mean, I think like you going to India probably gave you that perspective of like, I just need to go to medical school. I don't need to go to the best medical school. I just need to go to medical school and then I can figure it out from there. So I'm sure. So tell us, how was the experience there? Like, how was the transition from DC to Grenada?
It was awesome. St. George's was a good school for me, because I think I realized like Yale was great, but I think that I probably could have been happier at a different school. And so for me, I was at medical school. I was studying the stuff that I wanted to study because I found it interesting, except for histology. And then I was in this like beautiful setting with people who are also motivated. So if you don't know anything about Caribbean medical schools, I think a lot of people who go to Caribbean medical schools, there were a lot of Canadian people. It's very hard to get into Canadian medical schools. And there were a lot of people from California. Yep. So, we're starting into medical school. So the people who went there were actually really motivated. It's like that. Yeah. Like they had been through similar things, or there were older people. I feel like we had a lot of people in their 30s and 40s at that, you know, who had joined a medical school, who had sort of had, it was their second career and they decided to go to medical school. So everybody was like super motivated. So I really love St. George's. You do your basic sciences down there. So I was in Grenada for a year and a half. And then for 6 months, you go to St. Vincent, which is another Caribbean country nearby, to do some rotations. And then for your second 2 years, you do your clinical rotations in the U.S.
Yes.
So you get placed, and I moved to Brooklyn for my last 2 years of med school. So I was in Brooklyn for 2 years.
Very cool. Well, I think we have to talk about like, you know, making it to like two third year, like, you know, at St. George's is not easy either. I feel like, you know, there's like certain things you have to be able to like do to like make it out. I think that's from my understanding is that they're not letting everyone go to third year. So you basically do have to be like doing very well and at the top of your class in order to even make it out back to do your rotations in America.
Yeah, you have to do well. And there were definitely people who got weeded out. And the difference between like St. George's and U.S. schools is that they're the classes are very large. So like you said, Saad, like, yeah, I think you have to do pretty well. I think my class was in the 300s or something. There were at least 300 people in every class. So I did end up doing really well. I actually got straight A's, which I was like after being at Yale and being like basically being beat down. Because I felt like I was enjoying the material. I was with like motivated people who were kind of in the same boat as me. And so I loved it. And then, I ended up doing really well in step one and moving to Brooklyn, which was fun.
And it's a great feeling. I think that's important for people to know that, like, even if you feel like you didn't do as well as on the MCAT, you can still do well on step one or the next exam. They're not completely
you know, great point. And Shashi, I want to know, how did you transition from maybe being, you know, in your mind, an okay student to an outstanding student? And in medicine, what do you think clicked?
I think it was a couple of things. So I think number one was sort of just maturity. I really felt like if I had been a couple of years older at Yale, I probably would have done better. I think there's like, I don't know if it's like myelination or something like changed over a couple of years where I just felt like things made more sense to me. So I also felt like I was buckling down and kind of like focused a little bit more. I think I was a little bit unfocused because I was partly because I was so young, and I think just sort of overwhelmed. And I think my environment, because I felt so much more comfortable in the medical school environment compared to undergrad. Just, you know, when Yale's great. It was a bunch of people from like prep schools or like, you know, magnet schools.
They had been in college for 10 years already.
That's exactly it. Like everybody was like, oh, it's so easy here. Like my boarding school was so much harder. I was like, what are you talking about? So I don't know. I felt like I found more of my people who are my speed in medical school. And so that I think that comfort and the fact that I just liked the material. I mean, I found, you know, pathology and anatomy so interesting compared to like PChem and physics and things like that. Yeah. So,
you had done some things. You had had some life experiences and met, you know, done some to kind of give you perspective. So I think that that's some fuel and some confidence that you may not have had.
Well said. That's exactly right. I think that perspective really just sort of changed things for me. I didn't take it so hard if things didn't work out because I knew that, it was in the grand scheme of things, everything was going well. So, having those 2 years under my belt really made a difference. And I'm so glad in retrospect that happened because it made me stronger, made me appreciate sort of like where I am today. I have a lot of friends who went through straight. I think you guys did too, right? Like you went to college, you went to medical school, and didn't take time off. No, Travis, you took time off in between, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing for a while there.
Yeah, that's right. You were like in industry for a while. So I don't know. So I'm sure like with you too, I mean, that perspective or that change of pace or meeting people in different sort of like areas in life, that just sort of changes your outlook a little bit.
It really does. It really does. And it puts like, it actually makes you a better student because like you just have less pressure, you're more confident, and you're just able to study like with like a freer mind, I think, which is important. And then also you're able to like kind of learn how to study rather than just like trying to memorize everything. So I think it's just like a lot of perspective that just comes with, taking time off and just having experiences. There's like no other like substitute for an experience. So that's awesome.
No. Yep.
Yeah, love it. So, tell us. You wanted to be a surgeon, right?
Oh my God, no! I was like, no, yeah, keep me away from surgery. So, I moved to Brooklyn. I like rented this basement apartment with another girl, and I was at Long Island College Hospital, which is sort of right in the middle of Brooklyn. Great hospital. And I did some other rotations as well, like Maimonides and a couple of other Brooklyn hospitals. But my main hospital was Long Island College Hospital. So went through all the core rotations, hated every single one of them. What am I going to do? because, I mean, some of them were interesting. Like surgery was interesting, but I would never become a surgeon. Like OBGYN was
horrific. I don't know why anyone would ever want to become an OBGYN. I mean, those women were like, those residents were happy. Pediatrics was sort of interesting, but I was like, I can't deal with the kids nor the parents. So the best part of, the best part of my day, honestly, for almost all of those rotations was radiology rounds. The best part.
Very cool.
Because we would go to the reading room and we would like look at our patients, you know, scans. And I was like, this is a pretty sweet deal. Like, they seem so happy. It's like calm, right? I hate beeping. Yeah. Like, the ER rotation was horrible because I hate beeping. So then I was like, radiology is for me. And I also loved anatomy and path so much. I felt like it really combined those two things for me. So I pretty soon after I finished my course, I was like, I'm applying for radiology.
Very cool. Very cool. That's awesome. So tell us, how was the application process for radiology?
Yeah, so the application process went pretty well. I think I had so much PTSD from my initial round of applying for med school that I over-applied. I don't remember how many programs I applied to, a lot. But I ended up, because I had done really well, you know, in med school, I had a great GPA. I did really well in my step one and step two. So I had no problems this time getting any interviews. And I ended up getting, you know, interviews at great programs. And I remember actually seeing a bunch of people who I ended up doing residency with, like on the interview trail. But I ended up interviewing at several places. The Brigham was, of course, one of them. Yale. I remember going to Buffalo, like in the middle of winter, which was, was like I'm never ever going there.
Right.
But there was something about the Brigham. I mean, Barbara Weissman was the program director. She's just an amazing, amazing, nice lady. And
shout
so,
out. Yes.
So just, I mean, amazing on so many levels. You would think as like a professor, she would be, you know, tough, but she was just such a nice lady. So she was the PD. And I just got a great vibe from the Brigham. It seemed like smart people, but it seemed like nice people that you'd want to hang out with. Yeah. So it was my first choice. And so I was like crossing my fingers that I was going to match there. And I remember, you guys always ask, where were you sitting when you found out?
We want to know. We want to know, where were you when you found out where you may go into residency?
So I was sitting in one of the offices at Long Island College Hospital, like with the residence room, the lounge, and with like a row of computers. And I just remember I just logged in and I was like clicking refresh, like around the time. And then when it came up that I had matched with the Brigham, I was like ecstatic.
There's no way anyone believed you. There's no way anyone believed that you went from St. George's to Brigham.
No. It was kind of a big deal, actually.
Huge deal. That's like, that never happens. I've never heard of that. So that's a very, very big accomplishment. It's awesome. Just awesome. There's no more to it. That's just an awesome accomplishment.
Yeah, I was very excited. If not the first time that someone had matched at a Harvard hospital from St. George's. I'm sure there's some other ones I didn't hear of, but
oh my God, you're like a celebrity there. I'm sure you're a celebrity there. They're like, he did it.
She made it. Yeah. So, did you have any mentors or anyone along the way that just really made a big difference for you?
I did, and it wasn't actually a radiology mentor. It was a rad-onc mentor. So my first year in Grenada, I was at like the white coat ceremony, right when you first get your white coat. Mm-hmm. And she was the speaker that year. It was an alum, and her name is Stephanie Weiss. She was down there, and I met her. She was at Hopkins. At that point, I think she was doing her residency. And we hit it off. And so we sort of kept in touch. And because she was at Hopkins and my now husband, boyfriend at the time, Lyd, was living in Colombia. Shout out to Lyd. He was living in Colombia. So I went, when I finished, you know, my year, I went up and ended up staying with him and doing some research in rad-onc with her at Hopkins over the summers.
Nice.
For two summers. So she was someone who I was like, wow, you went to St. George's and you ended up like you're an amazing program in rad-onc, which is like super competitive. And so we stayed in touch and stayed friends, and she was always very encouraging, and so I sort of really looked up to her. just as someone who did really well. And she was also just like a very nice person and fun to hang out with. So she was basically my mentor. Over the years, there was one other attending at Long Island College Hospital, Deborah Reed. She was a chest attending. She very much encouraged me when I said I was going into radiology. So I also looked up to her. But I would say Steph Weiss was probably my first and main mentor.
Wow, that's awesome. It's important to see someone do it. Yep. Otherwise, like, you can't even, like, you don't even know how to dream. You're just kind of like, I'm just going to listen to other people who don't know what they're talking about. And then we actually see someone who actually made it happen for themselves. It's a big motivator. So that's great to see.
Yeah, definitely.
So Shashi, what was the most difficult thing you encountered on your journey? And then if you could share with us how you got past that challenge.
In residency or just in general?
In general, because, you know, we haven't gotten into, you know, the wonderful things you do on a day-to-day, you know, but I think you've done so much thus far. I know our listeners will be inspired by your journey alone, but how did you do it?
You know, I think that my main challenge definitely was not getting into medical school the first time and just trying to figure out, like, okay, what am I going to do now? Like, just coming up, like, having to redirect things and come up with a plan B. I think that that's just, it was a turn I was never expecting after being, you know, sort of living my life in a pretty linear manner. It was just like, oh, the line has been, you know, like, decimated. So yeah. I need to figure that out. So that was probably my toughest thing. But then again, like, I really think it was a blessing in disguise. It gave me two things for, you know, I did two things for 2 years I never would have ever done otherwise. And I met my husband along the way, which was also awesome.
Wonderful.
Yes. During one of those years. So it was that definitely that made me, I think, the person who I am today. And I tell my children now too, it's like, it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
In fact, it's good to fail.
Yes.
Because it makes you appreciate, it makes you, first of all, makes you realize you're a resilient person. You can overcome it. Number two, it gives you perspective because, you know, there's always something worse that can happen, right? You have the know-how to get over it and come out on the other side a better person.
Yes, so important.
Talk. Preach.
Exactly right.
That's so true, man. That's kind of what I was hoping you would say, because that's how I'm feeling when you talk about how it didn't work out for you, but you turned that situation into something great. So
yeah,
big ups to you.
Yeah, thanks, absolutely. And it's in that note, so the same thing. So what would you tell someone who's struggling in undergrad or high school or med school trying to make it through? What would you tell them to, like, you know, help them through?
That's a great question. I remember that position that I was in, so I really feel it. I would say, you know, are you doing your best? Do your best, right? And then and then sort of reevaluate, like, what is important to you? Like, is the goal that you're striving towards something you really want? Is it something that maybe your parents want or something somebody else wants for you? If it is, in fact, something that you want, then you need to sort of, like, sit down, think about how you're going to get there, and also sort of split into small steps. I think the other thing was that I felt so overwhelmed at the very beginning with Yale and, you know, a very hard major, being pre-med, doing the MCAT, like, that was a lot, those were a lot of big things before med school. And I think I just got overwhelmed with it was just so many huge things. And then later on, I remember making a calendar, honestly, I don't know if you guys did this too, like, studying for the USMLE, I had a calendar. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this today.
yes,
right. But it was like very small bits and it was very easy to check off. And like, so splitting things into sort of smaller portions and checking those off sequentially, I think also helped me as a person, as opposed to getting overwhelmed all at once.
Yeah.
So, I would say, you know, just make sure it's something you want to do and anyone can do it. Anyone can do whatever they want to do, but you just have to sort of, like, hang in there and just have that motivation.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, that's like just controlling the controllable factors, you know, and mm-hmm. kind of have perspective on, you know, what you need to get done every day rather than like, you know, just being overwhelmed by like everything else that's, you know, could be happening. So that's awesome advice. But we'll get you out of here on one last question.
Okay.
So tell us, so in your current role as regional medical director for diagnostic radiology here at Kaiser, what are your favorite things about the position?
It's a position I never thought I would have had, right? If you asked me 20 years ago where I would be. And a lot of my positions that I've gotten into are things I've fallen into. It's not something I've ever sought out. It's just, it's something that I ended up, sort of taking on because I have opinions and I'm not afraid to work hard. And, you know, I think I can get along pretty well with people. Mm-hmm. So I'm super honored to be in the role that I'm in now. It's amazing. Like, you know, radiology at MAPMG is a small company, right? It's almost 80 people of just radiologists, not to mention all the health plan, you know, colleagues we have. So every day is kind of a lesson, and I feel like I've gotten a crash course in business school over the last couple of years too. But I think that the thing that I get most out of it is really collaborating, not just in radiology, both people. So for example, I give a talk today at the Nova Chiefs meeting, and it's just so nice to be able to see people. And like, you know, a bunch of the people that I saw in the crowd are people that I interact with pretty often because we're working with the AUC to, you know, improve turnaround time, or we're working with like pain management to make sure that they get their C-arm, you know, on schedule. So it's just, I think that being part of something bigger than, you know, I love reading cases, believe me, that's my first and foremost love. If I could go back to reading cases, and eventually someday I will, I need to pass on the reins at some point. You know, I love reading cases. I love like collaborating with pediatricians and peds specialists, but being a part of something bigger than myself is in being part of a huge organization where we actually impact a lot of lives sort of motivates me every day. And I'm really excited to, you know, we have a fantastic group of radiologists, and I'm really honored to sort of help lead that cohort of people. So
Awesome.
I love you in the position. I love you in the position, and I can't wait to see all the many things you're going to do. Because all those beautiful attributes. You're great with people, authentic, and working hard for us, and we love it.
Well, I love it.
Thank you, you guys. You guys are awesome. I appreciate you.
We appreciate you. Absolutely. And we appreciate everybody for listening. And thank you guys so much. And till next time, stay low and keep firing.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.
So it's actually Shushy, like a short U kind of sound. Shushy.
Oh, I like it. Shushy.
Yeah. And then Ranganath sort of phonetically.
Okay, perfect. Oh, excellent.
I tell people, I know it's weird. Like a lot of Indian names, the A is pronounced like a short U. So I tell people that, like, when you say tell someone to shush up, it's just basically shushy. And then actually, my family, they call me Shush for short. Like my sisters call me awesome. Shush. Yeah.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool.